Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitchList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined on Friday by Nick Pollock to go over these weekends, starters and the starters for next week.
What is happening, David? Eric? It's good to see you.
You too.
Yeah.
I saw a pretty nice performance from Jacob Mizrowski at Citi Field yesterday.
Yeah.
Not as nice a performance from Sean Manaea.
No,
it happens.
No, we'll talk about that a little bit. Also, Jacob Mizrowski, it's unbelievable. He was lower in velocity and was down over a tick to 98.7. Unbelievable. How could you do this?
How could you do that? You know, rainy day, gross.
Yeah.
I really thought that game was going to be delayed. It was not.
I think everyone did.
Yeah. Well, it was the last time Milwaukee was going to be in New York. So they were like, we're definitely playing this game. We're going to make sure we get this in.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, it worked out.
But anyway, so we got all the starters, of course, we're going to go through. I know we go very, very long in this. We say, oh, we might go long in this podcast. We're actually going to nail it. We know this because we have deadlines. We have things we got to attack.
It's a busy day. So we're going through. We're starting.
Yes.
In the AL East. Baltimore is in Sacramento this weekend and then in Colorado at the start of next week. Just keep that in mind. And then it's Boston. That's two start week for Kyle Bradish in Colorado and then home against Boston. Are you part of the club that is just done with Kyle Bradish?
I understand it. I put him down into questionable. I mean, it's in Colorado. You might even want to say it's do not. I get it. I really do. I still don't think that Kyle Bradish is destined to be this guy. I think the slider and the curveball are very good still, and he's just not executing them well, not getting into that rhythm of it. Mm-hmm. Like we saw in the beginning of the year, really bad, really good. Then it's been bad, I guess, the past like three or four.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that we think that's been forever, and it's really just been like three starts.
I think this goes into a larger offseason conversation about how to rank pitchers with bad foundational fastballs and how much you want to like manually ding them in your rankings, like not avoid them altogether, but do you just kind of like say, you know, is there a process where you could just like say, I'm going to drop them 5 spots, 10 spots just because they don't have that to fall back on, which means if the breaking balls aren't doing what they need to do, there's not that other thing to protect.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of my biggest misses this year. Absolutely.
Mine too. We talked about it on that show with Eno and Paul, right during the All-Star break. Shane Baz and Trevor Rogers, they're at Sacramento and at Colorado. These next two starts, I understand if you want to miss those given the environments.
Shane Baz does get Boston at least. That's good. And there's Trevor Rogers also, who just had a really rough start and it's been kind of back and forth with him. I'm still very much on the train of like, I think Trevor Rogers is better than any streamer that you'll find. Yeah.
And I should know
it's at Colorado, so fine. But then against Boston, I think you're good with that. And Brandon Young, really cool fastball, but we're not going to touch this until after the green mile of at Sacramento.
Yes. Yeah. And I should note that is a two start week also for Trevor Rogers because Baltimore has 7 games. So
I'm going to do that one.
Colorado, Boston. So you'd want to do that with a two start week. The aforementioned Red Sox have 4 games this weekend at Yankee Stadium. And then they have Seattle and Baltimore next week. It'll be a two-start week. It's also a 7-game week for Boston. So it'll be a two-start week for both Peyton Tolley and Sonny Gray, Seattle and Baltimore. Those guys are pitching well enough, and those are good matchups. You are going to use them. We talked about Jake Bennett before. Kyle Bland did some awesome digging for me on fastball locations for Jake Bennett and how he's just not elevating as well since the All-Star break, potentially because of fatigue. But obviously, part of what made Jake Bennett so good was elevated four-seamers to help set up the low changeups. If you are not elevating the four-seamers, and in particular against righties, he's throwing far more over the upper, but, you know, like kind of like upper third of the strike zone, but not really.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's a tough tightrope to walk. At Baltimore, maybe next week, I would try to avoid against the Yankees this weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, at least he's a lefty, and they like to send up a lot of lefties right now against righties. He might fare a little bit better. I don't know. But yeah, Bennett is someone that I think has the potential as a really good swatch, and they're going to send righties up there likely, and he could do well there. So I'm at least going to put him in the questionable part. While Brian Bello should be opening and doing well there, I don't know when he goes in the following week, but I'm sure he will again. Mm-hmm. And I'm still cool with that one. Otherwise, I mean, Paintoli, Sonny Gray, we are obviously rolling them out there. Rangers and Air Suarez is not quite in rhythm, and I'm a little hesitant, but I'm like, you know what? If you have him, okay, fine, let him roll. But if you have something else to look for on the wire that's I have as a probable start somewhere else here, I would actually make that swap.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox do. Bennett, you know, tracking way over his innings total. Sandoval has been fine, but not great. There's just not a lot of depth. And so we'll see. Somebody will join this rotation in September to help give some of those guys a break. We just have to see if it's a rehabbing starter or Eduardo Rivera or something. The Yankees, we talked about some of their shifts in the rotation with Ryan Weathers landing on the IL. Clark Schmidt is beginning a rehab assignment, but probably too late in the season for that to matter. The Yankees have four against Boston this weekend. They go at the Angels, at the Padres next week. It is currently lined up to not be a two-start week for anybody, just given the schedule, because Elmer Rodriguez is penciled in to start on Monday again, and then there's an expectation that Max Fried will be back next weekend. We'll have to wait and see if that actually comes to fruition.
Essentially, what's happening here is you have the doubleheader against the Red Sox on that Saturday. So once again, Fried showing up for a doubleheader, but that means then Cam Schlittler and Carlos Rodon and Gerrit Cole still need another day of rest. Mm-hmm. So thus Elmer Rodriguez would stick around for the Angels. And I do want to mention, I know it was a 97-mile-per-hour fastball for Elmer Rodriguez. He had his first game above actually completing five full innings, let alone six that we just saw. And he did not sit 96 in any game this year. I mean, maybe there's one actually in Las Vegas. It was like 96.2.
He did in the minor leagues. His velocity had been ticking up.
Saw 95 consistently. Yeah. In my app and everything, and this is 97. Sure. So I'm like, no, this is clearly adrenaline coming back. I'm like, I want to be here, I want to do this, I want to actually prove it my third time. I have no faith that velocity will stick around for Elmer Rodriguez, and I think that was a major reason why he did have the success that he did. So it is at LA, and what's really interesting is that with the Angels, they're going to send up a lot of right-handers. Theoretically, you think, oh, Elmer Rodriguez, sinkers inside and sweepers away, this actually plays into him, but he didn't go sinker inside at all with the 97-mile-per-hour fastball. We've seen other right-handed lineups this year for Elmer. I imagine it's going to be more of the other games that we saw where he didn't complete that fifth inning. I really would not go out and chase this one for Elmer, especially considering it's also one-off. So even if he does decently well, you still have to drop him anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Tampa Bay has San Diego this weekend. Then they have the Mets and the Rangers. It is a six-game week for them, so that also right now, not currently set up to be a two-start week for anybody because there's the expectation that Griffin Jacks is back next week. We did see Griffin Jacks make a rehab start already. It was fine. He has not missed that much time. So even though, you know, it wasn't like an 80-pitch rehab start, it was around 50, I believe. There's still the belief that he will be able to come back next weekend. I also think that he is going to make another rehab start this weekend if I'm getting the schedules correct, and then that will mean he should be back up to full strength. You know, at Texas, not a terrible spot to be in. I should note, sorry, because of the doubleheader for Detroit and Cleveland, our schedule here is a little messed up. It is a 7-game week for Tampa Bay, so it's 2-start week for Ian Seymour, and it's Mets and at the Rangers, which is a really nice setup for a 2-start week for Ian Seymour. We saw a decent Freddie Peralta start. Are you at all interested in like this pseudo revenge game against the Mets on Tuesday?
Oh, that's funny. No, I understand if you want to do it. Freddie Peralta forever is known as Professor Chaos. And what I saw in that game was him doing better at executing the game plan of four seamers up and changeups down, right? Better. It's always been a struggle. And it was not one where he just completely nailed and everything is fixed, right? Mm-hmm. With a guy like Freddy Peralta, we were saying, cool, they're going to make him throw more changeups. But he's not someone that is just a pitch mix difference away. It's more about a rhythm difference away, right? It has to do with him consistently executing, not what he's executing. So I think this is more of the same. If you want to take a chance that he's finally after four games of trying to brute force the feel of his changeup and his four-seamer finally getting success does mean, hey, maybe he's getting that confidence and he could do better. If you want to do that, absolutely. Personally, for me, considering all the history we have this year of this, no. I'm not going to chance it. And it's so late into the season that, like, it's just also risky right now for one game. So yeah. I'm still out on Freddie Peralta. Ian Seymour is Ian Seymour. McClanahan is McClanahan. Nick Martinez is Nick Martinez. Drew Rasmussen is Drew Rasmussen. And Griffin Jacks I have as a questionable because I have no idea how long he's going to go.
Yeah. Toronto, we got Shane Bieber on the IL. Not a major shock. Shane Bieber is going to be really interesting as a free agent this offseason. Just what his market is, what teams, you know, I assume we get like a one-year prove-it deal. But that's going to be a situation to monitor. The Blue Jays get Seattle this weekend, then at Cleveland, at Kansas City. They have an off day on Monday, so they do have a true six-game week. It's a two-start week for Spencer Arrighetti. I understand that you're going to see Cleveland, Kansas City, and you're going to think, I'm going to stream Spencer Arrighetti this week. And I would just probably encourage you not to do that.
Yeah, please don't do that. The Pasta Pirate is nothing that you should be focusing on. It's really simple. Avoid everybody except Dylan Cease and do what you want with Jose Soriano.
Yeah, and just some news and notes. Jameson Taillon has a rehab start at AAA today, Friday. So depending on how that goes, he could rejoin the rotation. And then the Blue Jays signed Michael Lorenzen. And so there is a very good chance, given the injury status of their rotation, that we get some Michael Lorenzen starts for the Blue Jays. In September, you are not stashing Lorenzen or Jameson Taillon. Those are just notes that they will be in the conversation in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Moving to the White Sox, they are at Minnesota this weekend. Then they're at Houston and home against Minnesota next week. It's a two-start week for both Sean Burke and Davis Martin. We have already talked about how the Davis Martin fun ended weeks ago, but the Sean Burke fun has become less fun.
Yeah.
And I know it's a two-start week. How are you feeling about Sean Burke recently?
So also really the only other player of consideration here is Anthony Kay, who's been kind of decent. It's about really just executing the entire arsenal around the edges as much as he can, especially cutters inside to righties. Hopefully the changeup is down as well. Sometimes four-seamers get exciting upstairs for Anthony Kay. Like, I can see how Anthony Kay can be that really effective swatch and that command guy over time. But it's not quite amazing enough that I feel like I have to do that, even though it's the Twins. Now, Sean Burke is the only obvious one here of consideration, and he was auto start. And I went this morning and said, no, I can't do that. So I pulled him down to probably start because Sean Burke, his amazing run has been a product of two things. One, the four-seamer still being really good and consistently executing that at the top of the zone. That skill is still very much present. The other aspect are the secondaries, right? As it typically is. What are the other pitches that are going to complement it? The curveball to lefties and the slider to righties, and there's also a cutter in there as well. Those were the pitches that really he could lean on and be more of a bit of a kitchen sink at times to both lefties and righties, with that four-seamer really being the foundation. His feel for them are bad right now. It's actually every other start, right? You have a 20 whiff game that had like a 9 whiff game before it, and then the next one's like a 4 whiff game, and then he has a 15 whiff game, and then he has a 6 whiff game. And maybe you can just say, cool, it's every other right now, fine. But that slider, I posted on Twitter a 3D zone plot, which we have, by the way, inside of our pro dashboard now. For every game, we have a 3D zone, which is so cool. Jeff Nivey, yeah, our developer, has been wanting to make that for ages, and he finally was able to put it together. And I was able to pull out everything but the sliders. And you can see it straight from the release point. You can see like the humps and like as a hitter, how it comes out of the hand. And it's so fascinating to me because you can so clearly see how it's just 75% of those were easy takes, just complete waste, non-competitive. And then he had one that was like right in the zone and one that was close enough that it got a chase. Oh boy. So Sean Burke, hi. You need to find that. I don't know if you will again. You should. Probably you've had it for a lot of the year, and this is like really the first moment of adversity that he has, and he has to adjust back. But I think he should. So I'm going to start him against Houston. It really will demand the slider down and away.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hey, Sean Burke, we still have some minor confidence here. Cleveland gets Kansas City this weekend. Then it's Toronto and Detroit next week. It's two-start week for Gavin Williams. You obviously don't need us to tell you to keep starting him. Despite the last poor outing, it happens sometimes. Parker Messick is still an auto start. We're not starting Slade Ciccone, who is scheduled to start against Detroit next week. And so Joey Cantillo, Tanner Bibee, Foster Griffin, you just streaming those guys? Do you have confidence in one of them more than the other?
I mean, Foster Griffin, sure, he's just been a Toby. Tanner Bibee, I have no idea what's going on. I never know what's going on. Did he lower his arm angle again? You got all this horizontal movement again. Like, I don't know. Gavin Williams, I'm not worried about the last one. It was a weird game of bad curveballs, essentially. And then Parker Messick is just dope and makes his field dope. He's not an ace. Parker Messick is the first perfect example of like how a pitcher goes through a third of the game, third of the season being elite, third of the season being their worst self, and then a third that you just is a toss-up. While Parker Messick is just like not having the one third that's bad. And it's just a good season, and he's going to get overdrafted in my view next year. Slade Ciccone, don't want to touch. And Joey Cantillo, I know that was a weird quality start. He had the worst change of command I've ever seen from him. Mm-hmm. That should not happen. And I think everything else fell apart because he just could not locate anything but really a curveball.
Yeah.
So I'm still in on Cantillo.
The Tigers, they get the Dodgers this weekend. Then it's at Minnesota, at Cleveland next week. It's a two-start week for both because there's a doubleheader Friday, just so you know. So they are off Thursday, but there's a doubleheader against Cleveland on Friday. So it is a seven-game week for the Tigers. So it's two-start week for Jackson Jobe and Troy Melton. Nick and Eno had a really interesting conversation on The Craft about Troy Melton in the episode that's called like All About Cut Fastballs, I believe was the title. So you should go check that out. But Troy Melton, Minnesota, Cleveland, you know, that's not even a question. But what about Jackson Jobe? Two-start week at Minnesota, at Cleveland.
So I brought on Jake Crumpler for The Craft this week. Eno's at Sabre Seminar. And a conversation I had with Jake, and I really wanted to get his opinion on, was these young guys who come up that I every year, you know, it's like the shiny squirrel, as Rob Silver told me in 2019. Like, man, this guy I feel like is a safe play and also has that really fun upside, like the Bubba Chandler, the Jackson Jobe, the Jared Jones, you know. And I've just been so disappointed. So Jobe is another one of these where the four-seamer is not doing enough. And he's not getting whiffs on the secondaries as we expect him to. So it could be something that a lot of these young players, I didn't even mention this in that episode, I'm just thinking about this now. A lot of young players are unaware of how good hitters are on picking up tells. It's really insane. If you talk to some of the elite hitters, they just know every little thing about coming the ball out of your hand, what it is before it does anything. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that these young pitchers are not even aware of that. But whatever the reason is, Jackson Jobe is not trusted to go six strikeouts with one earned run at this point.
Yeah.
It's just not there. So it's questionable start for me. He could, but it's just a grind each time for him. So I'm not in there. Melton is great. Drew Anderson, I want to be interested in, but it's a split change and it hasn't quite come together. Framber Valdez, that's just hilarious to me at this point. And I don't want to touch that. And Kiedier Montero is a whip god. So there you go.
Yep. In a 15-team league, I might be inclined to roll the dice on that Jackson Jobe two-start week. But I hear everything you're saying, especially about how long he's going into games. It's not a situation I love, and hopefully we see some steps forward in September that can make us feel better about him next year. Kansas City, they are at Cleveland this weekend, and then it's Miami and Toronto. It's two-start week for Randy Dobnak. Miami and Toronto, have we moved on from the Randy Dobnak experience?
If you want, he is a slinger. He is someone who's just going to, yeah, you know, he's your uncle pitching. And it's like, how does this work? I don't know. It can. I mean, that's one of the things that I have to try to balance when I give advice or do these rankings. Like, I'm trying to express that there is an opportunity for Randy Dobnak to go 5 or 6 without destroying your ERA, right? It's absolutely possible. And there are a lot of other pitchers who are just not really going to have that good of a chance. However, they have a lot more strikeouts. They have much higher upside. And if they do go six innings, it could be an amazing outing. Dominic doesn't have that opportunity. So it's that balance there. I'm not into it. 15 teamers, it's not the worst thing ever, especially two step. I think you might want to do it in a 15 teamer.
That's wild to say, but I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because it's like, if you're looking for volume, if you're looking for a win, if you're trying to get any sort of movement on ERA, the Marlins and the Jays could easily just hit themselves into outs for five innings against Dobnak. You have Noah Cameron and Michael Wacha. Wacha is a clear one, especially against the Guardians. I'm really excited to see how many changeups he throws against those lefties. And then you have Noah Cameron, who I have him as a probable, but you guys are going to see this in the roundup, which comes out shortly after this, that Noah Cameron is at 92 now on his four-seamer, and he's not the guy who is on that amazing like five-game heater anymore. Yeah. And he's still getting the like doing enough. It's so funny how oftentimes you see the ramp down as opposed to like really good and really bad.
Yeah.
But I'm a little worried about it. And I would think that anyone's planning for like September with Noah Cameron should be a little careful. Right.
Not worried about it against Miami next week, to be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear on all that. And Daniel Lynch, you know, it's interesting. It's not still not deep enough in games, but you know, I'm curious to keep watching in these next two starts. Wrapping up the AL Central with the Twins, they get the White Sox this weekend, Detroit, and then at the White Sox next week. It's two start week for Taj Bradley against Detroit and the White Sox, which obviously, you know, you can feel, you never feel great about it with Taj Bradley because we never know what version of him is going to show up, but that's obviously something you are going to do. My question to you is about Dean Kramer. He was somebody we were like kind of interested in last week when we were talking about it. He gets gets the White Sox this weekend and Detroit next week. In a 15 team league, those matchups seem good enough to keep rolling out Dean Kramer. No,
Dean Kramer is fine. He has a splitter and a cutter that are generally okay at the moment. It's not exciting. It's not, you know, I've called him Dean Wolf in the past where he shows up and is a beast once a month, but it's okay. Right. Especially for your 15 teamers. Like this is your 15 team Toby / Hips or whatever you want to call it with that. Yep. He was formerly Hipster, but it's now like, all right, you're kind of safe. I would say also Taj Bradley is, I have him as a problem because if you have Taj Bradley, you're going to do it. He is very frustrating.
Yeah.
Connor Prelip, I don't know if he's going to, you know, flick the switch now. He is a perfect guy that I want to circle for 2027. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, I don't know how much we're going to get by the end. And Zebby Matthews, it's kind of funny. He won the Gallows poll last time out. And because he had the most whiffs of on the day. If you don't know, they don't read the SP Roundup. That's my award I give to the person who has the most whiffs. It's 23 for Zebby Matthews, all because of the slider that was so good down and away to right-handers. It was the best slider I've ever seen Zebby Matthews have. And I was so excited about it that I actually texted Pablo Lopez and said, Pablo, can you please go and tell Zebby Matthews that he won the Gallows poll? And if you guys don't know the story of that, Pablo came onto our podcast in 2020. And then at the end of it says, hey, I have a question for you guys. You go, all right, what is it? He says, what do I need to do to win the Gallows poll? And we were just blown away. We're like, that's our thing. Like, you're not supposed to read that. So we actually sent him a trophy that year. When he won the Gallows Bowl in 2020, which was really fun. So he actually like mentions it all the time with me. And so he told Zebby Matthews that I need to give him a little extra context, but once he understood, he was ecstatic. So hopefully Zebby Matthews still has that slider working against the White Sox twice. Otherwise, I'm not as confident. You know, I think that there are still some issues of throwing too many good strikes to hit. That is hittable strikes in the zone. Hopefully it's what we just saw. So questionable start for both of those for Zebby Matthews. And
hopefully Zebby Matthews also has that trophy for the Gallows poll. Just, you know, even for
I gotta send him one now, clearly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Pablo could lend it for a little bit. We are going to move on to the AL West, but before we do that, we are going to take just a quick little break. AL West, the Athletics, they are home against Baltimore, and then it is fully on the road next week. Texas and Seattle. It's a two-start week next week for both Gage Jump and JT Ginn on the road in Texas, in Seattle. If you're not going to use those guys in those matchups, Nick, they should not be on your roster.
I mean, that's pretty much it. And also, Jacob Lopez, come on, let's keep it going. I mean, I understand it's very much a Vargas rule of like the second that he does not have the approach, like we move on.
Yeah.
But he's just been doing it. I mean, you guys have heard me say this every single time for the past month or so, and it keeps going. So good luck. And
yeah, you gotta
jump,
keep,
man.
You got to keep using well. Him. And then, yes, Gage, Jump, and JT Ginn are, to me, matchup plays. But,
should I have him Gage, Jump as a questionable at Texas?
I would.
Yeah, I think I'm going to change that. It's really just one of those cases, like a pure cherry bomb kind of scenario.
Yeah.
Just who knows what it's going to be.
But I think, you know, you got to play the matchup. In that
yeah, way. I think you're right. I'm going to change that.
Houston is at the Mets this weekend, and then it is 4 against the White Sox and 3 against the Diamondbacks. And so it is potentially a 2-start week for both Peter Lambert and Mike Burrows. This is under the expectation that Mike Burrows, who made his third rehab start at AAA yesterday, I believe, or maybe Wednesday, will be coming back up. Burrows has not looked particularly good on the rehab assignment. You wasn't looking particularly good before. Remember, he was sent down to AAA and then got hurt. And then so there was a demotion in there as well. So Mike Burrows is not somebody we should be chasing after. But I want to talk to you about this 2-start week for Peter Lambert, because it's the White Sox in Arizona, but Peter Lambert has not been that good lately.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fine. I understand against the game against the Yankees, like, oh, no, he didn't. He didn't get that final out to get a poor quality start, right? He had a really good changeup and four seamer pitch separation, though, of what that represented what his successful run featured, right? This is the kind of Peter Lambert that we want. I understand it was a 9-earned run game against the Angels before that, but I mean, this was actually 5.2 innings of 2-earned runs, not even 3. I forgot about that. Where before the 9 earned run game, you have to go all the way back to June 29th to a game where Peter Lambert didn't allow more than 2 earned runs.
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, that game not so good. True. Against the Yankees. Against the Angels. He also had 15 whiffs against the Yankees. So I'm still very much on the Peter Lambert Holly train.
I will say against the Padres, 160 whip, against the Angels, 273 whip, against the Yankees, 176 whip. So
that to me is more of a BABIP thing of the batter of, you know, of balls in play. Yes, walk rate is higher than we want it to be too. But I think this is still very much worth your time.
Okay. So we are not fully moving on from Peter Lambert. No. Are we fully into George Klassen? The Angels get 3 against the Phillies this week, and then it's the Yankees and the Pirates next week. That is a potential 2-start week for George Klassen. It depends on if the Angels are continuing to use a 6-man rotation, which they've kind of been doing since Yusei Kikuchi came back, because they've kept Ryan Johnson in the rotation as well. So if it's just George Klassen versus the Yankees next week, I think you're going to want to avoid it. But just keep an eye on that situation. But I'm just curious your thoughts on George Klassen recently.
Yeah, and by the way, Eric, if you don't agree with any of my assignments of the tiers, I better hear about it. We're clear. I don't want to be like, did you feel different? Yeah, I feel different.
I mean,
you gotta announce it.
I would put Peter Lambert in more of a questionable tier than a probable start tier, but
okay,
we just
there you go
about that.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be a probable, just because even I know you're talking about the whip and stuff, it's like one or two off, and I feel like the ERA difference is good win chance, all that stuff, a decent strikeout rate. With Klassen, he's great against right-handers, not as good as against left-handers, because it's a gyro slider that is elite, and that works a lot better against right-handers. And his four-seamer is just like, I'm going to throw it hard and try and get it inside the zone. I think this is a perfect situation of or example of a guy who needs to add more and needs to figure out that plan against lefties. He does not have as good of a four-seamer as your other fastball slider guys like Strider's past or Chase Burns and Jared Jones in his peak, etc. So you need to have that extra element. I think it should be a cutter at 93 or something like that they can jam to lefties, especially with that 90 gyro. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that over time. Not there yet. And I'm going to have him a questionable right now.
Yeah. Reed Detmers has been pitching like an ace for a while. I'm looking for my exact wording on this tweet, but I did tweet about Grayson Rodriguez, and I just basically said, I know that we are really into Grayson Rodriguez recently, but we should note that even in this, well, collectively, people are very into Grayson Rodriguez. I'm just saying,
I have no idea. I don't listen to them. I just have my own.
Yeah, because the results, the surface level results, like the stat lines, have been good recently. But if you looked at his last outing, it was 87% four seamers and changeups. It was a 5% swinging strike rate. And so you're still looking at a pitcher who's exactly like we have talked about, which is a righty who's getting by with a four seamer that doesn't have good vertical movement and a good changeup. And the breaking balls are still not taking a step forward, which means he's not really getting whiffs. And so, sure, if he's going to face the Guardians and they're going to throw a bunch of lefties at him, there's a good chance Grayson Rodriguez can put up a quality start with a low strikeout total because he can get that changeup working. But if he's going to face righties, or if he's going to face a team like he gets the Yankees next week, I don't have confidence in that because he's not really doing anything which suggests he's making meaningful strides. He's getting by on a four-seamer changeup as a right-handed pitcher, not a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, so here's two funny things about Grayson Rodriguez. Right, as you mentioned, faced the Guardians. He threw a few pitches, of course, against right-handers as well, and it was 15 pitches. 12 of them were four-seamers, and then yeah. Three of them were sliders, and those sliders went 0-for-3 for strikes. And that's an issue. It's not a very good four-seamer. I will say he does a decent job, at least against righties, to elevate that four-seamer.
Sure.
We have seen in the past that he can jam guys with it against lefties. But right, four-seamer changeup, Grayson Rodriguez, not fun. We've been shouting, hey, where's a cutter? Grayson Rodriguez threw a cutter last game. Eric, I'm convinced he did. Because he threw one of these sliders at 89.5. Okay. But do you know where that cutter landed?
I don't have the chart in front of me. My expectation would be up in the zone, but I'm going to say it probably like hit the batter.
It hit the batter. Yeah. Hit him in the foot. The lefty in the foot. Oh my gosh. So he didn't throw another one. Oh man. Look, that's really the thing that we need Grayson Rodriguez to find, because he's throwing 85, 86 mile per hour sliders that are extra sweep to it. I'm more convinced these days I don't want the extra sweep. I just want the gyro. The curveball is at 82, but it's not really much depth to it. He is more of a pronator, right? He's someone who's more on the changeup side, so it's going to be hard for him. And I'm interested in him next year. I'm curious to see how he changes himself now that he finally is on the field again. That's really all he's been trying to do, is just get on the field and get reps. But right now, as you're mentioning, I agree. I'm not trusting Grayson Rodriguez against the Yankees. It will be lefties. Keep in mind that he likes to send lefties against righties. It doesn't matter. No, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. No, thank you, sir. Seattle gets Toronto this weekend, Boston next week, and then home against the Athletics. So not Sacramento. We had the note that Bryce Miller has been pitching through a lat injury for about the last month, which dovetails pretty perfectly with when he really started to crater. This is just a good example of the idea that, like, sometimes grinding it out for your team is actually not the solution. He's pitching through an injury. He pitched through an injury last year. He's not pitching well right now. If I was the Mariners, and I'm obviously not, I'm sitting here in an office in Queens, but you know, Ryan Sloan looks really good at AA, and I might just shut Bryce Miller down for a little bit and see if my other top pitching prospect can fill the spot in the rotation, or just, you know, go to a 5-man rotation like most other teams. Because I personally, as a fantasy manager, I cannot put Bryce Miller in my lineups knowing that the results have been this bad and he's pitching hurt. I cannot do that.
There's that, and also the fact that you went out to the bullpen and didn't show up. It might have been like, hey, throw a bullpen today or something like that, but I think they were considering putting him into relief the other day.
Yeah.
So I as I'm making sure that Cashew's okay. Sorry.
You all right?
Okay. Meow. Well, she has asthma. So That's turned into other things. I'm so sorry. that was an amazing meow, by the way, Eric. Thank you. Want to sound clip that for the future. I have a soundboard. And Bryce Miller, right, we shouldn't be. I have him as a questionable right now. I think I'm going to lower him into do not start. It's what you're saying.
Be
upfront. Say, like, it should be do not start, and then say your soapbox, whatever you want.
Don't start Bryce Miller. It should be do not start.
Yes, it should be do not start. I'm going to change that myself. Cade Anderson, I'm really in on. And I even said this to Jake yesterday. I think Cade Anderson is a lot better than a lot of the fun upside guys.
I tried to tell you that the slider was better than you thought the slider
was. I think the thing that surprised me the most was truly how good the command was.
Yeah.
Also, you said the slider was better. You didn't mention to me that he has a slider and a curve, which had been misclassified as one breaker. Instead, he has a curve that he throws inside the zone for strikes, and then a slider that's harder, that is better than I expected. Throw that all together, I think Cade Anderson should get better over time, and then you have this unbelievable baseline of command. So it could be, I honestly hope he kind of struggles this year, which sounds crazy, but I want him to go through his adversity now.
Yeah.
And then get better.
I want to directly address the Lance Brozowski tweet that got a lot of retweets. This is not a criticism of Lance. This is great information, but he was talking about how the vertical movement on the four-seam fastball and the spin rate on the four-seam fastball were drastically different than what we saw in Double A, in part because it's a new baseball, right? And I just want to point out that while that information is both accurate and really important, it doesn't mean that information is sticky. The more that he pitches with the Major League Baseball, the more he will become, the more he will adjust to the seams of the baseball. So Lance's tweet was great. Just don't read Lance's tweet as saying, like, this is what his IVB will be in the major leagues. It's what it was, and it could very well continue to tick back up to what we saw in the minors. It may jump up in the next start. It may take three starts. We don't know. But just understand that adjustment to the ball will take some time, and that's not to say that Cade Anderson has lost that skill, that ability to throw with that kind of vert. It's just that it was not there in the debut, and it might not be there, you know, this weekend in Toronto, and it might not be there next week against Sacramento. We have to see how long it takes, but it was a pretty good start through five innings, and then he, you know, tired a little bit. I'm fully confident in Cade Anderson. Like you, you know, I don't think we're getting the Double A numbers, obviously, but I think if you were worried by the first start, I would not worry too much about that.
Yeah, I'm with you there completely. Yep. We got Texas coming.
We got Texas. They are at Milwaukee, and then they are home against the Athletics and home against Tampa Bay. It's a two-start week for both Jacob deGrom and Mackenzie Gore. You're going to feel pretty good about using both of those, because even if Mackenzie Gore against Tampa Bay is questionable, you have Mackenzie Gore at home against the Athletics. I like that start. I'm curious. I really want to talk to you about Cal Quantrill, because it's been a sustained period of success for Cal Quantrill. This start against it's Milwaukee and Tampa Bay are his next two, so they're not great matchups. And I'm curious where you land on the performance. Has been good. Do we love the skills? Do we love the matchups?
Yeah, he is the unquantifiable. Right. I've had so many nicknames for Cal. He's Cal Ripken right now. Back when he was on the Padres, I called him So-So Cal, which is probably my favorite one. Because that's, of course, South California guys. Now, I would say that Cal Quantrill is someone who's on a heater with his splitter and his cutter right now. He has amazing feel for it. I am a sucker for a Vargas rule where a guy is executing approach consistently start to start and having success with it. And I just keep rolling with that. I mean, if you did a couple starts ago, you would be benefiting now, right? So I'm in again at Milwaukee. I am in at Tampa Bay until I see that he loses that rhythm.
Fair. Okay. There we go. Cal Quantrill.
Thank you, Cal Quantrill. Yes. Cody Bradford, by the way, cool extension. Nice.
Yeah.
And Mackenzie Gore hosting Athletics, I have as a probable, even though the last one was really bad. I think it was in Seattle. I was really disappointed with that one. I think I still am going to do that because it's good home park, bad offense. And yes, Grom is still an auto start, guys.
Yes. I'll start again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Moving on to the NL East, we have the Braves. They have three in Colorado.
Actually, hold on a second. Wait. All right, so before we go for Atlanta, Eric, guess what? We have to take a quick break.
Now we can go to Atlanta, who has Colorado at home this weekend. They have a weird one-game makeup against the Giants on Monday, and then a two-game series against Washington, and then three at Philadelphia. So it is a six-game week with three opponents for the Braves. It's two-start week they have nobody listed here for a two-start week because they have six in the rotation with Bryce Elder, with A.J. Smith-Shawver now fully in the rotation. Just some kudos to Chris Sale. Chris Sale threw a pitch 100.1 yesterday on Thursday. That was his fastest pitch since 2018. Chris Sale.
Since Ohtani, of course, is, you know, amazing.
Chris Sale has been great. You know, there's no analysis in there. Just he's been great, and that's awesome.
That's pretty much what the SB Roundup lead is. It's that. Yeah.
He's been tremendous. Has anything changed on your stance on A.J. Smith-Shawver?
No.
Okay.
And also Grant Holmes, I know, has done well and he gets Rocky Road, but that's actually going to be a lefty lineup. Mm. And Rocky Road, I understand. No, we don't, you know, it's very easy. Well, if you are right-hander without great left-handed weapons, then it might actually be harder. And I do not trust the real estate broker right now.
Yes, we do trust Tyler Mahle, who gets Colorado at home this weekend. That's a start that I think you really have to make. Bryce Elder against the Giants, Martin Perez at the Phillies, Tyler Mahle at the Phillies. Any thoughts? Are you avoiding those? Are you making those starts?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I think if Martin Perez is good enough in Colorado against Colorado, then I feel fine with it at Philly for a cheap win. It really depends on where he's at. You know, if he's in decent rhythm as of right now, I'm going to say yes. And in Mahle, I actually originally had as a probable, but I'm like, you know what? Fine, at Philly, not great park. I'll be a little more conservative there.
Yep. Do like what Mally's doing. I've written about it a few times. We've talked about it. The locations have been really good with the Braves. And so good for you, Tyler Mahle. Moving on to the Marlins. They get Washington this weekend with a wraparound on Monday. And that is a three-game series against Tampa Bay and a three-game series against the Cubs. So that's a two-start week for both Tyler Phillips and Ryan Gusto. The Marlins pitchers, like, they showed up against a hot Red Sox team, but except for Sandy Alcantara. Actually, his start was fine. But I think that our analysis here remains the same. Yuri Perez, Sandy Alcantara, you're starting against anybody. You're probably not starting the other guys. I'm curious, though, why Jansen Junk on Sunday you have as a do not rather than a questionable.
Because Jansen Junk doesn't go very long into games often and isn't that great. And I don't think that he's worth your time.
Even against a struggling
National. Oh, man, there have been very few starts that you actually wanted to start Jansen Junk for the past like 2-3 months.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we talked about it in the past. The strikeouts have not been there. And then I guess, yeah, I didn't know. I forgot it was 4 2/3 the last time out against Washington. It was only one run allowed, but 4 2/3.
That's such a limited ceiling.
Yeah.
Why risk it?
That's true. Yeah. He rarely goes longer than five if he goes five. I get that.
Yeah.
Good call out. The Mets, they're home against Houston. Then they're at Tampa Bay and then home against the Giants. It's two-start week for Robert Stock. Tampa Bay and the Giants. I don't think that you can do that.
I'm curious if the Brewers go after Robert Stock because he is a four-seamer cutter guy. Mm-hmm. But you really can. It's unfortunate. Sean Manaea, it looks like the magic is waning a bit for him, even though he's still throwing hard, though. It could come back, so I'm not going to completely count him out. Zach Thorne is very basic, and it's a quality start play or a cheap win play, I guess. Right.
Which against that Giants lineup could certainly work next week.
It could absolutely work. Nolan McClain just started this point. And Christian Scott, I think, is taking the steps forward. It was a bad like inning or two where he just lost guys again. We've seen that before from him. However, I think it's actually a really interesting start against the Astros as Christian Scott's actually found a good rhythm with the Kendall McSanchez against the lefties. That is the cutter and the four-seamer upstairs. He needs to actually refine his right-handed approach now and get the sweeper down. So I hope we see that.
Yeah. Zach Thornton against the Astros this weekend makes me a little nervous because of how many righties are in that lineup. And, you know, that we talked about the changeup needing to be there, but not really being there. Moving on to the Phillies, they have the Angels this weekend, then Arizona next week and Atlanta. It's two-star week for Aaron Nola, who five of Aaron Nola's last six starts have been pretty good starts. We're starting to see some better production from Aaron Nola. We did see an arm angle change. It's not leading to like drastic pitch movement changes, but I'm curious, you know, at Arizona, I mean, the Atlanta component in the two-star week is not great. This could be a Diamondbacks lineup on Monday that still does not have Ketel Marte because of whatever that weird situation is. But I wonder if it's time to put Aaron Nola in the questionable start given his most recent run.
The thing is, the last game against Seattle was not as good as I wanted it to be. And I did lead with him. Heater Anola, a lovely call out to Super Troopers. I don't know how I still have like extra puns left for Aaron Nola roundups because I think he's been the one I've done the most since
Super,
the start.
Super Troopers 3 coming out in a few weeks.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, they are not sponsoring at all. And then we had Nola's Odyssey as well this year. I mean, like, I don't know how this is happening. Anyway, Nola is the same guy. He's still allowing home runs. He actually, even during this hot stretch, he's allowed a home run in every game. He's just been really smart and only allowing it as a solo shot or maybe a two-run shot and that's it, as opposed to like the three-run homers or so that really ruined the day. So that is still very much present. And when it comes to if I'm going to trust him or not, I pretty much already am saying, well, he's going to allow at least one home run.
Sure.
Right. Okay. And that already is like, oh boy, the floor is getting lower and lower and lower. The ceiling is getting lower with it. Right. So that to me, it makes it just too risky. The curveball, yes, it has having success. There have been some moments where he is locating those sinkers beautifully. Like some front hip ones were so nice. It's still just the same risky Aaron Nola. It really is to me.
Okay. I get that. Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely. Andrew Painter though. Oh man.
Looks great. Yeah.
You're stoked, aren't you?
I'm very excited. Looks very, very good.
Who's better, you know, Eric? Painter or Kate Anderson for next year?
Kate Anderson.
Why?
I mean, I guess we'll see what happens over the next month.
Right? It's going to be a lot different in a month, but yeah.
I trust the overall arsenal for Kate Anderson a little bit more, but to the point we were making before, like the big knock on Andrew Painter was that he wasn't pitching backwards enough. He was relying on a poor four-seam fastball. The four-seam fastball has gotten better. Anderson's four-seam fastball has not shown up metrically, but again, we have one start. So by the end of September, I think we'll have a better idea of, is Kate Anderson a below average fastball pitcher at the major leagues, or is he an average fastball pitcher at the major leagues? And I think that would be it. That's going to go a long way, and we'll have a better idea. Is this fastball for Andrew Painter for real, or was this a short blip? But yeah, I think if I will tell you, like, if Andrew Painter's current fastball carries through September, where we feel like this is a pretty locked in change for 2027, he's probably a top 30 starting pitcher in next year's rankings, if not maybe top 25. I mean, like top 30, let's call it top 30.
Yeah. It's a perfect showcase of the floor versus the wider spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Andrew Painter with 120 PLV stuff plus fastball now. Woo! Yeah. I finally got whiffs on the slider and sweeper down and away. Like he didn't for one game. I'm like, maybe there's something about that. And then he does it again and then gets all the whiffs. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm so curious how Andrew Painter continues. If it's just more of the same throughout the entirety of September, I feel like it might be more in. At the same time, it is velocity dependent. And I don't
velocity like... velocity and vertical movement dependent.
Right. Vertical movement. More so though, the focus to me is, I think vertical movement is a little stickier than it is velocity. Like velocity, we see guys have a peak and then it falls down. And when it's so dependent on that, as opposed to Kate Anderson, I'm less enthused.
I get that.
So even if he does it the rest of the year, does not mean that Andrew Painter is going to have 98 plus next year too.
Wrapping up the NL East with the Nationals. They get Miami this weekend, wrap around on Monday, then a two-game series against Atlanta, and then it's the Dodgers. You're not starting anybody in this rotation other than Cade Cavalli. I did just want to point out the Nationals' own tweet this week that Cade Cavalli, 26 of his last 28 starts have been three earned runs or less. And I was like, yeah, but some of those starts were like two and a third, four and a third, four innings. Like,
their job is PR, Eric. Runs,
but it's like, yeah. Anyway, that's not a knock on Cade Cavalli. We do like Cade Cavalli. The changes he's made have unlocked a lot of things for him. I think Miami this weekend, you feel really good about. The Dodgers next week is going to be a real test.
That's his coronation day.
How sticky is this in terms of him being like a true top 15, 20?
Right. He gets aces going to ace if both of these starts are good. The one player I've been saying a lot is Jackson Kent. Just be aware of him. I'm not saying that he's going to do well. I'm saying that I've seen in the past pitchers like him who are showcasing good intent with an arsenal that very much has worked in the past. So as long as he continues that intent, that command and that ability to actually make those adjustments could happen, and all of a sudden he becomes a really good swatch.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that one. Andrew Alvarez, I'm sorry, guys. I'm just not as enthused as other people are.
Yeah.
I think that it's Kyle Bradish situation, but worse, of having a curveball and a slider that is everything. The fastballs are not good. And he also is too inefficient to really go 5-6 consistently, even though he had a nice little run of it. It's going back.
Yeah. And I will just note, if you're in deep leagues, Will Dion has been used as a bulk reliever. And so there's some fantasy value in that, even if you're not using him as a traditional starter.
Yeah.
And before we move to the NL Central, we're going to take a quick break. Starting the NL Central with the Chicago Cubs. They got the Reds this weekend, and then it's four games in Milwaukee and three at Miami. That's going to be a two-start week for both Clay Holmes and Matthew Boyd. I feel pretty good about both those guys, partially because they have Miami as the second start of the week. But it's good team context. I understand the Milwaukee start isn't ideal, but I'm okay with both of those in two-start leagues.
Yeah, Matthew Boyd is not getting whiffs right now, and he's very home run prone, and I'd be careful with that one. Clay Holmes is a better win in ERA guy, but you are going to have a higher whip in general. Keep that in mind, and David Peterson just had a 17 whiff start, and if it's really bad on Friday hosting the Reds, then fine, I'm going to move Peterson out of the questionable start. Meanwhile, Kevin Gausman showed that, yes, I do have a good enough defense behind me, and I can have the success, finally. So I feel like we should be totally confident there. And showed him in Aga. I know he allowed like a three-run homer or something like that, but then he was amazing otherwise. And the velocity was not 90.4 again. It was 91 in change. So I think we're back and we're good with Shota.
Yeah. Kind of needs to, that 91 is an interesting cutoff point for him. But again, he's Miami next week, and we like that matchup. The Reds, they have the Cubs this weekend, then the Padres, and then Milwaukee. It's a two-start week next week for Brady Singer at the Padres and the Brewers. Against the Padres and the Brewers, both in Cincinnati. I cannot do that. Right now, I cannot pitch Nick Lodolo, given the blister and the issues. Chase Burns, you're still going to use, but as Eno mentioned to you on the craft, or maybe I'm just listening to too much Eno. He may have mentioned DVR on Rates and Barrels, but the shutdown is imminent for Chase Burns. They are monitoring his innings. They are out of contention. They are going to shut him down. Who knows when that will be? You just have to keep an eye on that. And if you are in like a head-to-head league that's doing playoffs, you really need to factor that into any decisions that you're making, because we don't know how many more starts he has left.
Yeah, be careful with that, because we've seen shutdowns before, and that could be 2 weeks out from the end of the year. And if you're in a roto league, fine, understand that. If you're in a head-to-head, well, that's like your championship week or so. You got to get there. And Chase Burns is still, I think, pitching well enough. I know the bat last game wasn't. That was a case where finally a slider wasn't getting strikes, and he needs to get his four-seamer higher up if he wants to get any sort of whiffs on that four-seamer. But he still should be very much started until something actually comes out saying, hey, we're not going to be starting Chase Burns a ton anymore. I mean, that's just how this thing works all the time. Sometimes they just go with it and it doesn't matter. Like, who knows?
I think you can't, like, preemptively, like, drop him, but I'm just suggesting that, like, you need to just have a backup plan or have an extra starting pitcher.
Yeah, recognize that this is a possibility.
Yeah. Moving on to Cincinnati. Or no, it's not Cincinnati. Milwaukee.
That was Cincinnati.
That was Cincinnati. Moving on to Milwaukee. Texas this weekend, then at Chicago, at Cincinnati. It's a two-start week for Kyle Harrison, and then nobody else because they are currently rolling with a six-man rotation. They have said that they are going to do a six-man rotation at least in the next couple of weeks just because of the games. We don't know if it will always be a six-man rotation, but for now, Robert Gasser and Shane Drohan are remaining in the rotation. I saw with my own two eyes Dustin May on the field throwing before the game yesterday. So even though he took that comebacker off his leg, I'm assuming that he is going to make his start on Sunday against Texas. So, you know, I think you should still feel pretty confident about that. He had gotten things back on track. And then obviously the comebacker, not a great situation.
Right.
Logan Henderson, Jacob Mizorowski, you're using whenever. I think that Mizorowski, they're going to be careful with his innings, but you know, he still has been going six. They just might not push him, you know, super deep into games, but he's so efficient with his 80 or 90 pitches that you're probably getting six innings from Mizorowski, even if they're monitoring his workload.
And even that is like, okay, let's even go four innings. It could be eight strikeouts. Like, you still have to do it. Even if I understand, oh no, the win and the is not necessarily in play, or hey, the ERA and WHIP are expressed over fewer frames. Like, he's still going to get those strikeouts that are valuable.
Yeah. And the rest of that rotation we already have talked about a bunch. Mm-hmm. Moving on to Pittsburgh. They're at Seattle this weekend, and then it's San Francisco and LA. It's two-start week for Paul Skeens, who seemed to rebound a little bit his last time out. But it's Paul Skeens at San Francisco. It's the Angels. Like, we don't need to belabor the point too much. I'm curious. You have Bubba Chandler as a do not start against the Giants, though.
I can't do it. He's so clearly figuring things out. The ceiling is very limited right now for Bubba. I know we had that 111 strikeout game. I don't think he has another one above seven otherwise. And even what he did last time, Bubba Chandler, it's kind of funny. It's a four-seamer that lost velocity, but the slider, oh no, it gained velocity because what he has now is an 89 to 90 mile per hour curveball. And you go, wait, what? And I go, don't worry, it's an actual gyro slider. So he has a gyro slider now and then a slider at 93 that's really a cutter. I like this. It's a better version of like Kumar Rocker, essentially. I feel like he should be throwing a ton of these curveballs. This gyro slider. Ton of those cutters and then saving that four seamer. It's possible. It's all right there, but he just doesn't know. He doesn't know what he's doing still. And I'm not saying that necessarily like it's going to harm you. It's just, I'm sick and tired of like starting Bubba Chandler and it's just always nothing burgers. I would rather stream in his spot at this point than wait for something that is really worth my time. If I'm rather streaming your location on my roster, I am not starting you. I'm moving.
I guess my question is, wouldn't you be streaming like Bubba Chandler against the Giants?
I don't think so. I mean, I get completely. It makes all sense. PNC Park and the Giants, and it could be fine. Like, it could be okay. I'm not saying it won't. It's just that the ceiling is so minimal.
Yeah.
That it's like not worthwhile to really invest in that.
Okay. I get it. Wrapping up the NL Central with the Cardinals, they're home against Pittsburgh. Then it's at the Dodgers at Colorado. So listen, you're avoiding all of these pitchers next week because it's the Dodgers and then it's in Coors. So that's the easy analysis. We also should just note the Kyle Leahy run was fun. They are severely limiting his innings now because he was a reliever last year and he's gone way over his innings totals. And so I just don't think we can be using Kyle Leahy anymore. Yeah. And that's not a knock on him performance wise. And Kyle Leahy will be in an off-season article that I am going to do where I really look at starters who come from the bullpen into the rotation and what it does for their results, because we've seen guys like Braxton Ashcraft, Reed Detmers, Ian Seymour, who really kind of hone a focus in the bullpen. And I think Kyle Leahy may join that group, maybe not with the upside of those guys, but you know, next year could be a really interesting fantasy year for Kyle Leahy with a full, another full offseason as a starter under his belt. But
yeah, I think it's really interesting. Also, hopefully the command is a little bit better, because even during the hot stretch, I was like, this shouldn't be as good because it's not really well spotted or anything like that. Quinn Matthews getting a probable start against Pittsburgh, I know sounds wild because he just had that ridiculous, amazingly bad outing, but it's the Pirates, and I think he's much better than what we saw in that game. And I think that one should be very much worth your while.
Moving on to the NL West, the Diamondbacks are at San Francisco this weekend, and then it's Philadelphia and Houston next week. It's two-start week for Brandon Pfaadt, Phillies and Astros. You're still probably just going to do that because we've been doing this dance with Pfaadt for long enough right now that we understand what we're getting. Eduardo Rodriguez continues to just pitch really well, and so I know it's the Phillies, but at this point, there's just no logical reason to bench him unless you're in like an eight-man league and you have like the best starting pitching staff ever. And then Jose Cabrera, you know, Cole Drake, Merrill Kelly, you just can't use those guys.
Right? Unfortunately, like Merrill Kelly, maybe you can say something about the Cubs tipping and stuff like that, because he actually didn't, he did his thing. Like he went down and away with changeups and down away with sliders, like opposite hand batters, right? Or like both sides of the plate, but it just didn't work. And I'm like, it looks so good on paper, and I still can't do Merrill Kelly there.
In a 15 team league, if you want to roll the dice against the Giants this weekend, because it's the Giants, I understand the logic, but I would hopefully be finding something else.
Right.
Colorado, their hole next week is in Colorado, and so you're not going to use any of these starting pitchers.
And if they were not in Colorado, I don't care either.
Yes. The Dodgers, they get Detroit this weekend. And then it's Seattle and Washington next week. Eric Lauer back in the rotation because Roki Sasaki is on the IL. Eric Lauer against the Nationals next weekend. I think we are back to, hey, if you're in deep leagues and you're streaming for a win, you know, you can roll the dice on Eric Lauer.
Yeah, and Otani, they were mentioning even like a piggyback of like one inning or so. So I imagine actually Lauer is going to follow Otani on Monday. That's my guess. So there might be some value there in Lauer there and that one, but that's why Otani is a do not start for me, because I don't think he's going to go more than two innings or something like that.
We also saw Tyler Glasnow back off the IL. There were some, you know, command issues, which are to be expected off the IL, but velocity looked good. I did note that like there was some increased movement on the breakers. And that's just something I'm watching in the next start, because maybe that was a random one-off. Maybe that was some tweaks that were made. It could just also be health related, right? Like if his back is feeling better and he is a little looser in his mechanics, he might just be getting more movement than he was prior to the injury. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's Tyler Glasnow.
Start him.
He's healthy. You're going to start him. That's just
the
something
slider
I'm watching.
Had a ton of strikes. Lots of strikes for the slider in that game, which is really cool. Yeah. And not what he had like at all this season and in the minors. So that was like, oh man, that's great. He got a little bit extra sweep on it, less drop on it. And that might have helped it be a little more accurate, an extra tick of velocity.
Yeah.
So it's possible. But we're great with this.
The Padres, they are at Tampa Bay this weekend, then at Cincinnati and home against the Yankees. It's not a two-start week for anybody because next week we should get back Joe Musgrove. And I did want to note, Joe Musgrove had a rehab start in AAA yesterday. Have you looked at that, Nick?
Oh, no, I did
not
see
that. Don't look at it. Don't look. Okay. If I told you he threw 60 pitches in five innings, how many whiffs would you say he got?
Four.
He got three. He got three whiffs.
60 pitches is interesting. And 90, so, let me see now. I'm actually looking at it.
I will say I'm looking at a dashboard that was created by Nick Pollock himself. 70% strike rate, you like to see. After talking about how he felt better than he's felt in 2 years, the four seamer velocity fell back down to 93.5.
Yeah.
Now,
this seems like a tune up, though.
this could also be a veteran in his last start before coming back who was very clearly pounding the strike zone with a 70% strike rate and was not, you know, really, you know, reaching back for more velocity. So yeah, I'm not going to read too much into it, but at the same time, given who Musgrove has been in the past, the fact that he's throwing 93.5 here and not getting any whiffs just means to me that, like, I don't feel a need to proactively, like, aggressively stash him. Like in a 15 team league, if you wanted to add him ahead of time, I get it. The Reds aren't particularly good, even though it's at Cincinnati. But in 12 team leagues, I just don't feel like I need to get Joe Musgrove before he is back.
Eric, I have some good news. Are you on the page for Joe Musgrove in AAA that game against
Oklahoma? I am.
Okay, so look at the pitch movement plot. Mm-hmm. This is something that I really like about my dashboard, is it really picks this out quickly. Pitch classifications are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and there are so many times that, like, a four-seamer gets classified as a cutter.
Right, so a lot of these 91-mile-an-hour four-seamers are probably cutters.
Are cutters. And you can actually see, if I haven't gone in and actually updated these yet, but you see there's a lot of 94, 95 in here. You can even go to the velocity trend. Mm-hmm. And you'll see more likelihood that, okay, hold on a second, he is more around the 93.5 and above to 95, so he's probably around like 94 and change.
You're correct,
across 60 pitches or so. So I'm not as worried about the velocity drop that it looks like innately, because these 91 mile per hour cutters, 90 even, are pulling it down. So don't be too afraid by that. I also think that the 60 pitches, as you mentioned, just a tune-up, he's gonna go five innings, but he can go 75-80 at this point.
I still are you in the sense that in a 12 team league, would you be adding him before you even see him on the mound?
100%.
Okay, it's fine. I get it. Also, I will say, now that looking at the full schedule, it's at Cincinnati, and then it's Washington. That at Colorado is not ideal, but I mean, Cincinnati, Washington, first two starts is not something that I'm avoiding.
Yeah, it does. I could see going to questionable for the at Cincinnati. Still ill, but then again, adrenaline, I feel like he's pitching well enough right now. Okay. And then the Nationals, I think, is a clear one.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I will amend my earlier statement. wrapping up with the Giants, they get Arizona this weekend, then a one game against Atlanta, and then it is Pittsburgh and the Mets. So it's a seven-game week for the Giants. It's a two-start week for Logan Webb and Landon Rupp. Landon Rupp, Pittsburgh.
You almost got it. Landon Rupp.
I said Rupp first, then I corrected.
And now then you went back to Rupp. I don't know.
Rupp at Pittsburgh at the Mets.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that as a two-start
week? So he went yesterday. He only had three strikeouts and seven whiffs, but at least he finally, like, kept batters off of the base path for the most part. 120 whip, but one earned run in five. It wasn't the greatest curveball and change up to lefties, but he did a really good job with the cutter upstairs. And hopefully he can change his ways and really get to that curveball and change up down consistently. It wasn't that consistent against right-handers, but I think it's fine. I think it's all right. You know, I just hope that he can, you know, transform himself into the guy we want him to be.
Blade Tidwell or Tugboat Wilkinson, any interest in either of those guys?
Tugboat over time, maybe. But I'm not ready to do that. And Tidwell, I think, is only good against right-handed heavy lineups. And you could make a case that at Pittsburgh, it might be decent. But I actually think that they are going to send more lefties to him, which means that it's not fun, because the best thing with Tidwell is a sweeper. And that takes down right-handers. Now, the one that I actually do want to talk about is this random name that you probably don't even think about at all. It's Anthony Molina. Mm-hmm. What do you know about Anthony Molina? Probably a little. I had to look it up because I remember last game, he's the one who came in after, I think it was Hauser. Either Hauser, no, maybe it was Wisenhunt, one of the two. And to give you guys a quick rundown of him, he's a right-hander with this pretty high arm angle.
I know that he was on the Braves.
Okay. 96 mile per hour four-seamer at 17 inches of vert. That he really tries to get upstairs, and it looks like he's a pronator while focusing on the changeup, but it's a slider, which is getting kind of classified as a curveball, which is pretty funny to me. and it's not that impressive there. But this is a right-hander that is a four-seamer changeup arm. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's something about that. I mean, he went 55% four-seamer in this four innings, one earned run, three hits, zero walks, and three Ks. Time in relief in his this is in his last start in August 19th in the minors is what I mean to say there.
And this is
go ahead.
Confirmed Molina was the return for Tyler Mahle.
Oh, there you go. And he was 96 when he did show up in that game after Adrian Hauser left. Still, again, four seamers, changeups were the thing. Sliders were filling the zone against right-handers. Yeah, it's like a worse Logan Henderson kind of approach right
now. I'm seeing some reports that the curveball has graded out well in his limited usage in the minors. And so, again, a path forward to maybe, you know, if he's in the rotation for the remainder for the Giants, seeing if that is a pitch that he throws more often.
That is very interesting because that curveball is 80-45, but its movement is like above the x-axis, like positive vert at times, and like looks very gyro, essentially. Okay. You know, it's one of those times the pitch classification is being strange when you have the slider, which is also like right there. You know, they're both very similar. It's a 3 mile per hour difference, but the vert at times is like 6 inches between them. It's strange. It's very strange. I feel like he's turning more into a cutter, gyro, slider kind of pitcher.
Yeah.
But I would say the comp that I have is a higher arm angle Logan Henderson, who's discount guys, discount. Not as good as Logan Henderson.
Discount Logan Henderson.
But that's the kind of understanding. It throws a little bit harder. It's higher arm slot though, but that's the kind of three prong attack of changeups and a breaker and a four seamer.
Yep. And that's going to do it. We did pretty well. We're still over an hour, but we did all right. We got through some things quickly. Hopefully everybody enjoyed them. We are in the final home stretch here. In our leagues and the starts, all that. I will just say it's going to start getting real weird, y'all, because we're going to start getting guys get shut down. Guys have, you know, get pulled after four innings. We're going to start seeing, you know, rotations just kind of shift at the drop of a dime. And so we're going to do our best to kind of keep you updated on all of this. But please, just a reminder that, you know, Nick during the week does his streaming starting pitcher articles, and those are going to be more up to date as the week goes on when we get a lot more of those, you know, rotation changes. So make sure you check in on all of that stuff as well as the week goes on. Every Monday, I'll still do my streaming starting pitcher article for the week. And again, same thing, that will change as the week goes on.
Expect that. Yeah, expect that issue on the list on Monday. Full on schedule based sit start for the entire rest of the year. Then I'll have the tiers of the different pitchers. So good luck, everyone. It is the hardest part of your season if you're in head-to-head leagues. Like, how do you make those decisions? If you want that extra edge, I cannot express enough, you have to get the Pro Dashboard. It's an alpha right now. You import your team, and we tell you the best hitters to add via Process Plus and the rolling charts. Mm-hmm. You get our rankings inside of your fantasy lineups so that you can see them. And of course, you get these dashboards that we're talking about. This baseball dashboard I use is built into it. We have updated. We made it better than the one that I have now. You got to get it. You get a live draft assistant that we are doing live sync. We are making that a feature. So don't worry. You'll have that for any October drafts, anything that you have throughout the entire next year. Go get PO Pro today. Promo code live dashboard to get 20% off PO Pro yearly. Eric, it is so good to see you.
Always good to see you. Always good to see you. We got to get out of here. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I got a long to-do list to churn through.